It's time for another edition of Dome and Domer, the only podcast for Notre Dame fans by Notre Dame fans. If you're looking for cogent analysis and unbiased opinions backed by careful reporting, you've come to the wrong place. For the next 20 minutes or so, you'll get a fan's perspective on the Fighting Irish without all the normal spin from the so-called professional analysts. It's Dome and Domer. Now, here are your hosts, Mike Brammer and Ed Jordanic.
Hello, Irish fans, and welcome to another edition of Dome and Domer. My name is Mike Brammer. Joining me, as always, Ed Jordanic. Also joining us from NDNation.com, Mike Coffey, as we kick off the 2014 Notre Dame football season. You know, every year we start this show, and it's always a, hey, what's going to happen? And I think going into this year, I was thinking to myself, all right, look, we got Golson back. It's all good. We got depth. Everything's great. This is going to be an awesome year. Let's have a lot of fun with this. And then lo and behold, we have yet another incident involving stuff outside the football team, at least outside the playing field and outside, you know, the team itself. I guess, Coffey, I'll throw it to you first. I mean, I don't want to say, was this a big surprise, because we've had issues before, but, you know, certainly if you're Brian Kelly, you got to be scratching your head right now, like, holy cow, what's next? And yet here we are, you know, dealing with this situation with Devaris Daniels, you know, Kendall Moore, Ishaq Williams, and Kavari Russell. Certainly Kavari Russell, to me, the biggest huge blow in all of this. But anyways, truth of the matter is, damage has been done, and this is going to resonate over the team this entire season.
Well, it depends on how things get resolved. I think, obviously, Notre Dame felt it needed to get the information out there. And, you know, with as Byzantine as NCAA regulations are, and as much as the, for lack of a better word, optics of it have to look when you're dealing with the NCAA, I think they just got forced into a corner. I think they would have preferred to just resolve this privately, see what's happening with these players. I just don't feel like we have enough information right now to determine what the effect is truly going to be. I think the immediate effect is you have four players, three of whom are starters, at least one of whom is crucial, unavailable at least at the moment for the season opener. And really beyond that, we don't necessarily know what's going on. There's so many rumors flying around. It's really hard to know what to believe. So I really think until we get some more information from this investigation, it's really going to be hard to tell what the impact is going to be. It's easy to say, it's going to be a huge effect on the season. No, it's going to be terrible. But there's situations where it may not be. So I think it behooves Notre Dame fans in general to just sit back and see what happens.
Yeah, you know, I think there's some truth to that. I guess, Ed, from your standpoint, I mean, certainly probably the biggest concern is that this does involve a high-ranking official at Notre Dame. I mean, it's an academic advisor. This isn't simply some situation where we got a tutor that, you know, may have crossed the line a little bit and, you know, kind of like what Mike's intimating, could we handle this internally? We're dealing with a situation where, you know, there's some higher-ups involved. And apparently these higher ups are wanting to come clean and, you know, spill the bills on this. And obviously that's what's, you know, a major concern in all this. But how do you see it at the moment?
Well, it's, you know, I mean, I think obviously you don't parade your president and your athletic director in front of the cameras if it isn't serious. And I don't think you name four guys and pull them out of practice if it isn't serious. I mean, given the state of privacy laws today for students, I mean, hell, these kids don't even have to, you know, parents don't even get to see report cards anymore. And you've got things like Duke lacrosse and other stuff where universities are very, very hesitant to, you know, drag students' name out into the public and, you know, kind of brand them as potentially a cheater unless they have some pretty good evidence. Pretty damning evidence, I think, that they did something wrong. So, you know, obviously they felt strongly enough that there was enough there to punish these guys, because, you know, Kavari Russell, I mean, he's never been in trouble, right? I mean, there's never been a issue with him. He seems like a good kid and a good student. You know, Ishak is kind of an enigma, and, you know, we've kind of, on the football field, we've kind of been teased like him ever since Diaco was stalking him on the streets of Brooklyn at, you know, 5 a.m. And Daniels has been, you know, has been in trouble before, academically, but, you know, it seems to me that, there's, you know, there's potentially, you know, problems here, and we should hope that they're, you know, that it doesn't go past, kind of, you know, four football players kind of screwing up and trying to cheat on a test or something like that. If it's bigger than that, if it's sort of systemic in nature, then you're really damaging the brand of the institution. You know, then you're talking about, you know, articles about, you know, where's Swarbrick, and, you know, while he's, you know, working on Under Armour contracts and ACC contracts, you know, he's not watching the academic side of the house in terms of taking care of student athletes and making sure that the system in place to support them isn't fraudulent. So there's all kinds of, you know, different cross currents here, but as far as you know, football goes, you know, it stinks. I mean, you know, Kavari's one of probably, same with you guys, probably one of my favorite guys to watch. You know, he gives great effort. He plays with a lot of passion. And, you know, DeVaris has always been kind of annoying, because he seems to take plays off. And, but, you know, supposedly he was rounding into form and coming back strong. And like I said, you know, we've been waiting for Ishak to break out for what seems like, you know, a decade now. So, and Kendall Moore, you know, as far as on the field, was probably not going to see a lot of action anyways. But it damages a team. It damages the depth. It damages the practice quality. It's a hit. And I don't, you know, think at this point that, you know, this is something you can lay at the feet of Brian Kelly. I think you have to lay it, you know, obviously I don't think the academic buck stops with Brian Kelly. I mean, you know, if you want to talk about recruiting the right kids and all those kinds of things, perhaps, you know, you could say, well, they went hard after Joe Mixon, and, you know, he's not going to play college football this year, or at least not for the school that signed him. So, you know, maybe you can go down that road, but besides that, I think it's kind of more an issue of how, yeah, you know, these guys.
I think I agree with you there. Yeah, you can't pin this on Brian Kelly. I mean, this is just outside of his realm. There's only so much a football coach has control over, and something to this level, he just doesn't. You got to have faith in the administration and everything that's going on from a tutoring standpoint with these football players, so you can't knock him. But, you know, Mike, I know that we could sit here and talk the entire show about this incident, but I would like to get on to some other things that are of interest.
I mean, one thing we should talk about is the fact that, you know, there's cheating is going on, you know, academic, you know, cheating on tests, plagiarism. I mean, that stuff is kind of unfortunately rampant on college campuses, regardless of whether, you know, the people doing it are athletes or not. It's going on at the service academies. It's going on at Harvard. It's going on at Stanford. I mean, it's a huge problem in higher education. And so it's, you know, in that sense, it's part of a bigger problem. But the problem is that, you know, the Notre Dame brand is all about doing things differently. So the way that this has to be spun is that, you know, Notre Dame is, you know, self-reporting this to the NCAA, is getting out in front of this because they honestly, truly believe that their job is to educate young people and hold them accountable if they screw up in the classroom or try and do things by, you know, taking a shortcut. And that is to the benefit, the long-term benefit of that student athlete, and to the long-term benefit of the reputation of the university. So you can expect the Board of Trustees to get involved in this, I would imagine. you can expect that they'll, you know, hold Swarbrick and Jenkins' feet to the fire, probably more so than Kelly, because this is really an academic issue, I think, more than a football issue, at least so far.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I think you're right. And I, you know, it is. It's a big problem. I'm sure you'd admit when you were there at Notre Dame, you probably saw some things that raised your eyebrow a little bit. I know I did. There were times where I was taking a test and I'm halfway through the test, and yet the first five guys that stand up to leave are football players. I'm like, wait a minute. But, you know, I don't know. I think it just, you know, that's part of the game. It's part of what goes on. And not to say that we as regular students, you know, weren't privy to that kind of stuff as well. I mean, if you went looking for it, you could find it. And it's, yeah, it's a major problem in academics outside of college football. I mean, and I, unfortunately, the guys in college football are held to a higher esteem now. And so all of a sudden, all scrutiny's on this. I agree. I mean, I think this problem's way bigger than people think it is. And it's not just college football. It's the entire academic program in and of itself.
Well, I think it's a little different now, if only because of the internet and so much data available that can be used in many different ways. I mean, they have software programs now where teachers can put in papers that kids have submitted, and it'll look out there to see if they've been plagiarized. You almost have to do that
exactly.
Now because
right.
the fact that you can Google an answer to a question so quickly now, that's it's real. And I don't want to come across one of those get off my lawn kind of guys, but it's so much harder to police now. So part of it, I think, is kids trying to figure out how much they could get away with. I mean, I remember back in my Notre Dame days, where there'd be test files in every dorm where you could go in and see like the last 10 final exams that this professor had done. And if you studied those, and if you had a teacher that didn't necessarily shake the exams up too much, well, heck, you practically were walking in there with the answers. But now it's just, I think it's gotten a lot more challenging, both for the teachers and for the students. And I think this is a market that's still trying to regulate itself. And I agree with you. I think cheating overall is much more endemic. Not only, I think, at Notre Dame, just the college and high school. I've got two kids in high school, and I hear stories about kids cheating during exams. And there's so much academic pressure now, even outside, even within the athletic teams and outside of them. And I think a lot more kids are reacting to that pressure by trying to take the shortcuts.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of truth to that. But, you know, let's so we're halfway through the show. Let me turn it at least a little bit to the 2014 season. And, you know, one of the things I wanted to address, and I think you guys might disagree with me, but I'm going to put a lot of emphasis on the new turf. And the reason I'm going to is because I really felt like it was a huge, huge disadvantage for us over the last 5 years. That field turned into a cow pasture in the worst way possible. And I think it was a deflating situation for the players because they would go on the road and play on turf, like in Michigan, or they'd go on the road and play on grass that had, you know, better footing than what we saw at Notre Dame Stadium. And so it became, you know, you're at Notre Dame and you're at home and you're like, you know what, this is good to be in front of our crowd, but man, what a pain in the ass it is to play on this crap.
I think
it mentally had a problem.
My memory isn't very good, but I don't remember them switching out the turf when the other team went on offense or vice versa. I mean...
No, but that's right. But the truth of the matter is, though, it just was deflating because you knew you had to deal with that, you know, right off the bat. And, yeah, the other team had to deal with it, too. But I don't know that it was something that we took to an advantage for us. I think it was something that we put up with because we had to deal with it. And I don't know. I guess we're going to know, right, at the end of the season.
No, I think it was a wash at best. I mean, it's, you know,
I don't know. I think it's interesting. We'll see how much we enjoy playing on our field now, knowing that it's a field that you want to play on. You know,
the players like it.
So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out.
But that's my take. It will. Now, I'm not one of those people who view grass as sacrosanct and all that. The thing with turf is it's a reversible decision. You hear stories about how, oh, this school went to turf and now they're going back to grass. Oh, they're going to turf. It's not a cheap thing to do, but it's something that can be done. My issue is I know a guy in Mishawaka. I shouldn't say I know a guy. I know of someone who's involved with the project who was out with some friends of mine for some beers and said that when they got down to the layer, like below the first 3 or 4 inches, he said the ground was packed so hard it was like concrete. He said it's no wonder they weren't able to grow grass, because the number of resods they did, instead of doing what they should have done, is go like down the 18 inches, scrape it all out, rebuild it, make it good. They would just kind of throw grass and dirt on top of grass and dirt, and it just eventually turned into something that was untenable. Now, the good news is,
well, if that's the case, Mike, if that's the case, you're giving all the conspiracy theorists all the. I mean, it's not. It would take what, maybe an hour and a half to dig down and to discover that. I mean, I can't believe that, you know, that kind of issue couldn't have easily been addressed with, you know, a little bit of research. I mean.
I'm just saying this guy is on the team that is taking the dirt out and putting the turf in. He's just saying what he saw. So,
yeah, I mean, I think that you can't dismiss the fact that we had one of the worst fields in all of college football. There's no dismissing that. You can't possibly sit here and say that we had a good
no,
field.
But
you also,
I'm not saying
you also can't tell me that they couldn't have. You know, I mean. If they're growing great grass in East Lansing and they're growing great grass in, you know, West Lafayette, and we're someplace in the middle, then you can't tell me that they couldn't have brought somebody in who would have dug down 2 or 3 feet, discovered what Coffee is just talking about, and
but,
said.
But they, Ed, they didn't. That's the whole point. They didn't. For some reason, they
but,
didn't.
But
why
Robert
is
got
the
up in front of everybody and said, "We've looked at this 6 ways to Sunday, and you know, we've brought in, you know, experts." And we've decided that it's a financial decision. It's a decision to use the stadium for more things than football. It's a stadium. It's a decision, you know, based on Brian Kelly's preference for, you know, what he wants his team to play on. It's that kind of thing. You cannot tell me that it's an issue of being unable to grow grass or to have a natural turf field or a hybrid field like they have in Green Bay. Or just it was not. Based on that, there's just no way. I mean, they could have dug down 6 feet if they wanted to and started all over. I mean,
yeah, they could have. I agree with you
and,
there.
And
they could have done it, but
I
they just did. So.
We are all three in agreement. And this what bothers me about it is that's not what they said. As Mike, as you said, Jack Swarbrick got up in front of everybody and said, "Oh, we investigated the 6 ways to Sunday," when it's kind of obvious they didn't. And if they wanted to do turf like for multi-use in the state and all that, that's fine. But have the, I'm not sure what the word I'm looking for is, but have the stones to stand up there and say, "This is what we want to do, and this is why we're doing it." Don't make up reasons to appease people that, quite frankly, I can't see how they're true. Because then I get the feeling that Jack is standing up there and lying to me, which doesn't really give me the warm fuzzies when he's standing up there talking about academic investigations. I need to be able to trust that when the athletic director gets up there and says something, that it's true. And the only part of it, as I said, I'm not a grass turf guy. As long as it doesn't increase injuries, I don't care what they have on there. But I do care that it seems, at least to me, that they weren't very straightforward about the reasons why they wanted to do it.
Yeah, no, I think I agree with that. I mean, I think that, you know, it was kind of disingenuous. The same way as that, you know, the campus crossroads is this, you know, presented as this, you know, kind of, you know, academic athletic intersection of, you know, of greatness. I mean, it's just, you know, it's just all kind of, you know, they kind of take us for, for kind of rubes, I guess. But whatever, you know, it's fine. They're gonna do what they want to do, and they've gotta frame it in a context that is palatable to their own conscience. So let them do it. I don't really care if they play on field turf or natural grass, as long as they play well and play hard and play Notre Dame football. But you know, we should probably get back to talking to that, because the turf is down. It's going to be down for the foreseeable future.
That's right.
And you know, it's only going to change if there's a regime change.
That's right. Well, having said that, I mean, I think that unfortunately we're 20 minutes into the show and we can't start talking about the impact of Golson coming back and the impact of what I'm going to do would be call out another running back, just like I did Cam McDaniel, and I'll call out Greg Bryant. But we're going to have to save that for the next show, unfortunately. But needless to say, I know that, Ed, we are going to have on the author of the brand new book. Was it the championship season? You're going to have to help me out.
Yeah, no, it's
I don't have the book in front of me.
Yeah, it's called Unbeatable. I mean, it's been out for a while. It's the release of the paperback. And I mean, I've read the book, and I'm not sure we should have this guy on, because I don't know how you do a book on the 88 team without a pretty extensive interview with one of the best backup walk-on kickers in Notre Dame history. I mean, Brammer, you are nowhere to be found in this book. So I think it's obviously poorly sourced.
That's right.
It's poorly sourced, and it's not a very good effort.
That's right. Well, you know, if you look at the media guide, they had my name down as Mike Brennan. So they had Brennan down for me in the media guide. So that's probably how he missed me.
Yeah. So,
but
so
anyway, that'll be interesting.
We could give Jerry a hard time about not. I don't know how he didn't get around to interviewing you for this book, but I guess
that's right.
You would have been. You know, you would have. I mean, everybody.
I would have had at least some good.
Show knows that you're at least as interesting as Wes Pritchett. Okay, well, maybe not.
But. That's right. Yeah, no doubt about it. Well, anyways, I guess we'll leave it there. You've been listening to Dome and Domer, an online conversation about Notre Dame sports from a fan's perspective. For Ed Jordanik and Mike Coffey, I'm Mike Brammer. Thanks for listening.